Chapter 35. When they were all assembled for the evening meal, Jorgensen strolled up from nowhere in particular as his habit was, and speaking through the muslin announced that Captain Lingard begged to be excused from joining the company that evening. Then he strolled away. From that moment till they got up from the table, and the camp bedsteads were brought in, not 20 words passed between the members of the party within the net. The strangeness of their situation made all attempts to exchange ideas very arduous, and apart from that each had thoughts which it was distinctly useless to communicate to the others. Mr. Travers had abandoned himself to his sense of injury. He did not so much brood as rage inwardly in a dull, dispirited way. The impossibility of asserting himself in any manner galled his very soul. Delcasser was extremely puzzled. Detached in a sense from the life of men perhaps as much even as Jorgensen himself, he took yet a reasonable interest in the course of events, and had not lost all his sense of self-preservation. Without being able to appreciate the exact values of the situation, he was not one of those men who are ever completely in the dark in any given set of circumstances. Without being humorous, he was a good-humored man. His habitual, gentle smile was a true expression. More of a European than of a Spaniard, he had that truly aristocratic nature which is inclined to credit every honest man with something of its own nobility, and in its judgment is altogether independent of class feeling. He believed Lingard to be an honest man, and he never troubled his head to classify him, except in the sense that he found him an interesting character. He had a sort of esteem for the outward personality and the bearing of that seaman. He found in him also the distinction of being nothing of a type. He was a specimen, to be judged only by its own worth. With his natural gift of insight, Delcasser told himself that many overseas adventurers of history were probably less worthy, because obviously they must have been less simple. He didn't, however, impart those thoughts formally to Mrs. Travers. In fact, he avoided discussing Lingard with Mrs. Travers, who, he thought, was quite intelligent enough to appreciate the exact shade of his attitude. If that shade was fine, Mrs. Travers was fine too, and there was no need to discuss the colors of this adventure. Moreover, she herself seemed to avoid all direct discussion of the Lingard element in their fate. Delcasser was fine enough to be aware that those two seemed to understand each other in a way that was not obvious even to themselves. Whenever he saw them together, he was always much tempted to observe them, and he yielded to the temptation. The fact of one's life depending on the phases of an obscure action authorizes a certain latitude of behavior. He had seen them together repeatedly, communing openly or apart, and there was in their way of joining each other, in their poses and their ways of separating, something special and characteristic and pertaining to themselves only, as if they had been made for each other. What he couldn't understand was why Mrs. Travers should have put off his natural curiosity as to her latest conference with the man of fate by an incredible statement as to the nature of the conversation. Talk about dresses, opera, people's names. He couldn't take this seriously. She might have invented, he thought, something more plausible, or simply have told him that this was not for him to know. She ought to have known that he would not have been offended. Couldn't she have seen already that he accepted the complexion of mystery in her relation to that man completely, unquestionably, as though it had been something preordained from the very beginning of things? But he was not annoyed with Mrs. Travers. After all, it might have been true. She would talk exactly as she liked, and even incredibly, if it so pleased her, and make the man hang on her lips. And likewise she was capable of making the man talk about anything by a power of inspiration for a reason simple or perverse. Opera. Dresses. Yes, about Shakespeare and the musical glasses. For a mere whim or for the deepest purpose. Women worthy of the name were like that. They were very wonderful. They rose to the occasion and sometimes above the occasion, when things were bound to occur that would be comic or tragic as it happened, but generally charged with trouble even to innocent beholders. Delcasser thought these thoughts without bitterness, and even without irony. With his half-secret social reputation as a man of one great passion in the world of mere intrigues, he liked all women. He liked them in their sentiment and in their hardness, in the tragic character of their foolish or clever impulses, at which he looked with a sort of tender seriousness. He didn't take a favorable view of the position, but he considered Mrs. Traver's statement about operas and dresses as a warning to keep off the subject. For this reason, he remained silent through the meal. When the bustle of clearing away the table was over, he strolled toward Mrs. Travers and remarked very quietly, "I think that in keeping away from us this evening the man of fate was well inspired. We dined like a lot of Carthusian monks. You allude to our silence? It was most scrupulous. If we had taken an eternal vow, we couldn't have kept it better. Did you feel bored?" "Pas du tout," Delcasser assured her with whimsical gravity. I felt nothing. I sat in a state of blessed vacuity. I believe I was the happiest of us three. Unless you two, Mrs. Travers. Dot, it's absolutely no use your fishing for my thoughts, Mr. Delcasser. If I were to let you see them, you would be appalled. Thoughts really are but a shape of feelings. Let me congratulate you on the impassive mask you can put on those horrors you say you nurse in your breast. It was impossible to tell anything by your face. You will always say flattering things. Madam, my flatteries come from the very bottom of my heart. I have given up long ago all desire to please, and I was not trying to get at your thoughts. Whatever else you may expect from me, you may count on my absolute respect for your privacy. But I suppose with a mask such as you can make for yourself, you really don't care. The man of fate, I noticed, is not nearly as good at it as you are. What a pretentious name. Do you call him by it to his face, Mr. Delcasser? No, I haven't the cheek, confessed Delcasser, equably. And, besides, it's too momentous for daily use. And he is so simple that he might mistake it for a joke, and nothing could be further from my thoughts. Mrs. Travers, I will confess to you that I don't feel jocular in the least. But what can he know about people of our sort? And when I reflect how little people of our sort can know of such a man, I am quite content to address him as Captain Lingard. It's common and soothing, and most respectable and satisfactory. For captain is the most empty of all titles. What is a captain? Anybody can be a captain, and for Lingard it's a name like any other. Whereas what he deserves is something special, significant, and expressive, that would match his person, his simple and romantic person. He perceived that Mrs. Travers was looking at him intently. They hastened to turn their eyes away from each other. He would like your appreciation, Mrs. Travers let drop negligently. I am afraid he would despise it. Despise it? Why, that sort of thing is the very breath of his nostrils. You seem to understand him, Mrs. Travers. Women have a singular capacity for understanding. I mean subjects that interest them, because when their imagination is stimulated, they are not afraid of letting it go. A man is more mistrustful of himself, but women are born much more reckless. They push on and on under the protection of secrecy and silence, and the greater the obscurity of what they wish to explore, the greater their courage. Do you mean seriously to tell me that you consider me a creature of darkness? I spoke in general, remonstrated Delcasser. Anything else would have been an impertinence. Yes, obscurity is women's best friend. Their daring loves it, but a sudden flash of light disconcerts them. Generally speaking, if they don't get exactly at the truth, they always manage to come pretty near to it. Mrs. Travers had listened with silent attention, and she allowed the silence to continue for some time after Delcasser had ceased. When she spoke, it was to say in an unconcerned tone that as to this subject, as he had had special opportunities. Her self-possessed interlocutor managed to repress a movement of real curiosity under an assumption of conventional interest. "I indeed," he exclaimed, politely. "A special opportunity. How did you manage to create it?" This was too much for Mrs. Travers. I create it," she exclaimed, indignantly, but under her breath. "How on earth do you think I could have done it?" Mr. Delcasser, as if communing with himself, was heard to murmur unrepentantly that indeed women seldom knew how they had won it, to which Mrs. Travers in a weary tone returned the remark that no two men were dense in the same way. To this Mr. Delcasser assented without difficulty. "Why yes, our brand presents more varieties. This, from a certain point of view, is obviously to our advantage. We interest. Not that I imagine myself interesting to you, Mrs. Travers. But what about the man of fate?" "Oh, yes," breathed out Mrs. Travers. "I see. Immensely," said Delcasser in a tone of mysterious understanding. W was his stupidity so colossal? It was indistinguishable from great visions that were in no sense mean and made up for him a world of his own. "I guess that much," muttered Delcasser to himself. "Be but that, you know, Mrs. Travers, that isn't good news at all to me. World of dreams, eh? That's very bad, very dangerous. It's almost fatal, Mrs. Travers. Why all this dismay? Why do you object to a world of dreams?" "Because I dislike the prospect of being made a sacrifice of by those moors. I am not an optimist like our friend there," he continued in a low tone, nodding toward the dismal figure of Mr. Travers huddled up in the chair. I don't regard all this as a farce, and I have discovered in myself a strong objection to having my throat cut by those gorgeous barbarians after a lot of fatuous talk. Don't ask me why, Mrs. Travers. Put it down to an absurd weakness." Mrs. Travers made a slight movement in her chair, raising her hands to her head, and in the dim light of the lanterns Delcasser saw the mass of her clear gleaming hair fall down and spread itself over her shoulders. She seized half of it in her hands, which looked very white, and with her head inclined a little on one side she began to make a plait. "You are terrifying," he said after watching the movement of her fingers for a while. "Yes. ?" she accentuated interrogatively. "You have the awfulness of the predestined. You, too, are the prey of dreams." "Not of the moors, then," she uttered, calmly, beginning the other plate. Delcasser followed the operation to the end. Close against her, her diaphanous shadow on the muslin reproduced her slightest movements. Delcasser turned his eyes away. "No. No barbarian shall touch you. Because if it comes to that, I believe he would be capable of killing you himself." A minute elapsed before he stole a glance in her direction. She was leaning back again, her hands had fallen on her lap, and her head with a plait of hair on each side of her face, her head incredibly changed in character and suggesting something medieval, ascetic, drooped dreamily on her breast. Delcasser waited, holding his breath. She didn't move. In the dim gleam of jeweled clasps, the faint sheen of gold embroideries and the shimmer of silks, she was like a figure in a faded painting. Only her neck appeared dazzlingly white in the smoky redness of the light. Delcasser's wonder approached a feeling of awe. He was on the point of moving away quietly when Mrs. Travers, without stirring in the least, let him hear the words. "I have told him that every day seemed more difficult to live. Don't you see how impossible this is?" Delcasser glanced rapidly across the cage, where Mr. Travers seemed to be asleep all in a heap, and presenting a ruffled appearance like a sick bird. Nothing was distinct of him, but the bald patch on the top of his head. "Yes," he murmured, "it is most unfortunate. I understand your anxiety, Mrs. Travers, but... I am frightened," she said. He reflected a moment. "What answer did you get?" he asked, softly. "The answer was... patience." Delcasser laughed a little. You may well laugh, murmured Mrs. Travers in a tone of anguish. That's why I did, he whispered. Patience. Didn't he see the horror of it? Don't know. He walked away, said Mrs. Travers. She looked immovably at her hands clasped in her lap, and then with a burst of distress, Mr. Delcasser, what is going to happen? H, you are asking yourself the question at last. That will happen which cannot be avoided, and perhaps you know best what it is. Oh, I am still asking myself what he will do. H, that is not for me to know, declared Delcasser. I can't tell you what he will do, but I know what will happen to him. Oh, him, you say? To him, she cried. He will break his heart, said Delcasser, distinctly, bending a little over the chair with a slight gasp at his own audacity and waited. Kreuzvaus? Came at last from Mrs. Travers in an accent so coldly languid that Delcasser felt a shudder run down his spine. Was it possible that she was that kind of woman, he asked himself. Did she see nothing in the world outside herself? Was she above the commonest kind of compassion? He couldn't suspect Mrs. Travers of stupidity, but she might have been heartless, and, like some women of her class, quite unable to recognize any emotion in the world except her own. Delcasser was shocked, and at the same time he was relieved, because he confessed to himself that he had ventured very far. However, in her humanity she was not vulgar enough to be offended. She was not the slave of small meannesses. This thought pleased Delcasser, who had schooled himself not to expect too much from people. But he didn't know what to do next. After what he had ventured to say, and after the manner in which he had met his audacity, the only thing to do was to change the conversation. Mrs. Travers remained perfectly. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.